In the Gospel of the Lord, according to St. Matthew, the 5th chapter, starting in the 13th verse. You are the salt of the earth, but if salt has lost its taste, how shall its saltiness be restored? It's no longer good for anything except to be thrown out, trampled under people's feet. You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand, and it gives light to all the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. The Gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ. You may be seated. I'm going to try and be as brief as possible, and I still won't be because I'm me. It's probably possible to be far more brief than I will, but I'm going to try to be as brief as possible because Jana and I are going to share this spot together today, and I really want to give time for Jana to share a little bit of what God's been doing in her life and what he has just taught her in such a beautiful and natural way about the things we're going to be looking at today. Jesus speaks to the people in the Sermon on the Mount all kinds of things about the way of Jesus, what it is to walk in the way of Jesus, what it is to be sons and daughters of God who walk in the way. We've asked the question, is there a particular way in which Jesus wanted his people to live, expected that they would live, anticipate that they would live? And it becomes more and more, already was my conviction, but becomes more and more my conviction the longer that I spend in Matthew 5, 6, and 7, that he absolutely did. And in fact, to understand and to even just take into consideration for a moment the gospel in its entirety, it's kind of almost crazier and crazier to me think that someone would think they could encounter it and not be drawn into a way of life, have their life not be shaped and transformed in all kinds of areas of what it is to be a human, what it is to be a man or a woman. And certainly here in this passage, Jesus starts to touch very clearly and very evidently on the fact that there is an expectation that the people of God would be something to the world around them. It points to us out, again, the fact, we've talked about this already, but I think in the Sermon on the Mount, part of what Jesus is trying to get us a little more comfortable with, to come to an awareness of, is that as the people of God, we should be different than the world around us. That there's something about those who have come into relationship with Jesus that is different than those who haven't. And I think we want to be sitting with that a little bit as we walk through this bit of teaching over these weeks together. Here, Jesus speaks very clearly to the idea that Christians being in the world should have a sort of influence. And so, here in these verses that I just read, we have, I think, Jesus speaking to what John Stott calls Christian influence. What I would kind of just tweak a little and say, we want to talk about Christ-like influence. That as the people of God, we should have an influence on the world around us. We should have an influence on the room, on relationships, in the places where we go, where we choose to drink coffee and work. So to break it down a little bit, I'll just look at the very beginning of verse 13 and 14. Jesus starts out, he says that you are like salt and you are like light. He says, you are the salt of the earth. And so I just want to break it right down to its nitty-gritty, right down to the itsy-bitsy pieces of the verse. You. And I think we should stop and say, you. You who? who is he speaking to? You are the salt of the earth. Does he just mean anyone who can hear him? I don't think so. Because these are a familiar passage, these are familiar words, and yet even Jesus hints at the fact that salt could lose its flavor. It could lose its season. There's a sense in which there may be those hearing this who it doesn't apply to. So who is he speaking to specifically? He's not speaking to the whole of humanity. He's calling out someone who is different, who is set apart in that they are salt. Unlike the world around you, you are like salt to the world around you. You bring something of flavor to the world around you that is different Who? Well, very simply, all we have to do is think back to last week's teach on the Beatitudes. The you is those who are poor in spirit. It's those who he calls blessed. Those who mourn. Those who are meek, hungry, thirsty for righteousness. Those who are merciful, pure in heart. The peacemaker. Those who are willing to walk the way of Jesus even if it costs them. Who walk it recognizing fully it's the way of the cross and still stay committed to it, to walk it. You are the salt of the earth. When you live in that way, when you take on Christ-like character that looks like that, you are like salt to the world. The second word after you is are. You, who the people I've just described, are the salt of the world. You are the light of the world. The reality of it is that when we come into relationship and are touched by the gospel, something happens. We are changed, transformed. And so the thing we're to catch here from Jesus is, I'm not giving you an option on this. I'm not sort of speaking out sort of a grandiose or idealistic idea for your future. I'm telling you that right now, as sons and daughters of God who have been touched by the gospel and are being changed by it, you are salt and light. Dietrich Bonhoeffer put it this way. With all of this, the followers of Jesus are no longer faced with a decision. The decision's been made. The only decision possible for them has already been made. They have to be what they are, or they're not following Jesus. I think I would have liked Dietrich. He's pretty matter-of-fact kind of a guy. Those are. I'm going to read them again because that what he's saying I want us to catch. With all of this that we've talked about, and the salt and light idea, the followers of Jesus are no longer faced with a decision. The only decision possible for them has already been made. Now they have to be what they are, and or they are not following Jesus. That to walk in life as sons and daughters of God and to walk not as salt and light is to no longer be in the way of Jesus. That's what he's saying. You are no longer walking the steps, the life of a disciple. That a disciple of Christ is salt and light. And so I think it just should arrest our hearts a little bit, bring us maybe to a fresh posture and perspective in front of a really familiar passage of Scripture. You are salt and light. Sons and daughters of God, Christians, those who call him Lord, should walk as such, should see the world around them changed because of who they are and how they live and who they follow. Salt. Salt is an interesting analogy. Salt in Jesus' day would have been essential to life. Certainly, we understand this to some extent. Unseasoned or underseasoned food is, to some of us at least, offensive. When I eat scrambled eggs without salt, I'm just upset because they could have salt and this kind of like, ugh, would be really great. So why did you not take a moment and put a little flavor here? And Jesus is saying that. He's saying when the people of God walk in the ways of the Beatitudes, when they walk in the way of Jesus, the moment life, not only for them, but for the world around them, is like seasoned food. Life was already happening, but something's missing. And just the presence of God's people begins to change the reality of everyone around them. And so I wonder sometimes if we were to live as salt in this world, if more people would realize how hungry they are and that they're actually hungry for something more than they've already got. Like if you've only ever eaten eggs without salt, do you know they're better? You know? But if you've got the people of God in your life, do you start to realize, whoa, wait a second. My life does not sound like his life. It doesn't look like her life. And not just on the good days, but even on the bad, Like to watch the people of God in the face of trauma, in the face of loss, and to think, wow, what is different there? There's a flavor even there. Salt was also used as a preservation tool. So you could pack meat in salt so that it would not decay or die. Kind of preserve it, extend its life. And I think in the same way that the Christian, that the follower of Jesus should be salt in that way, that they should be able to walk into places of darkness, places of death and dying, brokenness and decay, and preserve life. So many of us have a good friend from Lethbridge who is an MP in our country. She loves Jesus with her whole heart. She's been touched and transformed by the gospel. She is like salt in the nation of Canada. Mm-hmm. And some might say, well, what difference can she make? She's not able to, you know, kind of stand up and take control and implement and impact the decisions of the government, even if her government was in power, right? Because she's not. Her influence is somewhat limited because she's in this world. But I tell you, the nation of Canada is different because she sits there.
That's right.
Right? So right in the midst of the brokenness and the death and the dying, the decay, when the people of God walk in the ways of Jesus, they preserve life. They extend it. They slow decay. They slow death. They shape and change the world around them. And not just, that's a great example in a big picture, like for our nation. But the same is true of you when you're with your friends. The same is true of you when you're in Starbucks. The same is true of you when you're playing soccer with the team you're on. That the reality of it is your presence in the life of people, when you sit with a couple or a friend whose marriage is falling apart, and you just bring Jesus, you bring flavor to that situation, you actually suddenly could see maybe hope start to come there. Life start to come, to be preserved, to be extended, to be tasted. And ultimately, the beautiful thing would be if the world around you said, hey, I want in on this, and they actually came under the lordship of Jesus and became like you, in that they too become salt of the earth. That they experience the fullness of what it is that you've experienced, having come into relationship with Jesus, into a surrender to the gospel. But I think at the same time, we shouldn't miss the fact that even while they're on a journey towards that, your presence is doing things, life, that Christ, that the things of God are coming into their lives because you're in their life. And it's like salt in a preservation kind of a way. Salt could be looked at, the salt of the earth analogy, like social action. That to be salt, to be like fruit, to be like a preserver of life, it speaks to us of our Christian or our Christ-like influence in our culture by way of social responsibility or social action. That just by our presence and the way that we live, the way we get involved, you know, we just had our municipal elections. And one of my prayers was, God, put as many people in the way of Jesus on schools, trustees, boards right now as you can. Right? Because as we start to step into these places, we take social action. If they get in there and they're in that place, they are probably not going to get the opportunity to stand up and teach the Sermon on the Mount. But they are going to get to be like salt that begins to help now school boards preserve life, not take it away. So that, I think, salt is rightly understood that way as an analogy. Secondly, Jesus says, you are the light of the world. I love that the one who himself said, I am the light of the world, says to us, you are the light of the world. And it reminds us that to be salt, to be light, first we have to come into contact with the one who ultimately is the source of flavor, who is himself the gospel, who is light. I immediately think of John chapter 1, where it tells us that the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it. The true light, which enlightens everyone, was coming into the world. And I think when Jesus is calling us into this place and reminding us, you are the light of the world, he's reminding us of this reality, this possibility, this potential, that when you step into a room, even, like, let's keep it really real. When you just step into any moment, any relationship, room, environment, Jesus is added to the mix. That there is an incarnational reality to your life because you're a son, a daughter of God in relationship with Jesus. He resides in you. The light of the world is in you, so you are the light of the world. And so when you step into any moment, the kingdom has come. One of the things I forgot to mention, when he says you are the light of the world, the Greek word for you there, in English we have one word for plural and singular, right? You. We could mean you, a lot of you, or we could mean you, Chris, right? Certainly Jesus means, Sarah, you're salt and light. But he, actually that would be misled, the scripture here, the word's plural. You are the salt of the earth. You, that the church, the body of Christ, is the light of the world. The world should be different because the church exists. Actually, guess what? The world is different because the church exists. Isn't that something? Sometimes that's kind of amazing. Thinking, good night. Because you think, it doesn't feel like we're necessarily doing the greatest job, but the reality of it is, you are the salt of the earth, the light of the world. And as we walk in the way of Jesus, we walk in an incarnational way. We walk the way of the cross. We walk as those who know we are poor of spirit, who mourn in light of darkness and need and brokenness. Right? Who walk in meekness. And we inherit the kingdom. We inherit the earth. We begin to see these things happen. And in that way, we're like salt and light. And so I'm excited to look at these things, to talk about these things, because I think we see, really, when we're talking about these things, we see Jesus. We see the way he lived. That when Jesus came incarnationally and he walked and he interacted with people, one of my favorite stories in the whole of the Gospels is in Luke chapter 5, when Jesus meets Levi, the tax collector. And we don't get a whole bunch of the story, but obviously the guy is changed by the God. I mean, he's been radically changed. And Jesus, as quickly as he can, plans to have dinner at his house. So having encountered and now being together with Christ, salt and light, like it's starting for him, he has a laundry list of people he wants to meet this guy. But they are not the who's who. They're the tax collectors and sinners. Because that's Luke yesterday, that's who he was. And he saw what Jesus could do in his life, and so he just naturally begins to say, guys, we're having dinner, you gotta come meet this guy. He's a blast. He knows how to eat, he knows how to have fun, he is so full of life. And when I leaned into him and began to explore why, he was like, it's like flavor I'd never tasted. And when I came to him, he allowed me to taste it. And it's changing my life. You guys got to come to dinner. And all of a sudden, the room is full of tax collectors and sinners. And the room is looking, moment by moment, more and more like Jesus. Interesting. That's why it's one of my favorite stories. Because Jesus goes into these places, and Jesus doesn't suddenly start to play chameleon. Jesus is not that concerned with relevance.
Amen.
Yeah. Jesus just continues to be Jesus. He just is. And tax collectors and sinners are having their lives flipped upside down. Like the environment's changing. He has influence. And it's not because he stands up and preaches. They're having dinner. I love that story. He just is who he is. And then in the Sermon on the Mount, he says, guys, just be who you are. It's that easy. And when you do, you'll be like salt and light. So we're walking in the way of Jesus. That's how Jesus did it. The adulterous woman, John chapter 8. Jesus just changes the environment in the room. They're going to stone a woman. Before they're done, they're all gone and the woman's being restored. Like he completely is influenced because of who he is, and he just walks it out in the woman at the well, the washing of the disciples' feet. I mean, you just walk through Jesus' story and watch how the atmosphere, the environment is constantly influenced by his presence. And he says, you are the light of the world. That same thing should be happening when you walk in the way of Jesus. You'll see it. You'll watch it. And so part of the reason why I want Jana to come and share is because she, I could probably ask a few of you for sure, but when I talk about this, and I read these things and I think about this in my own life, one of my greatest inspirations in this way right now is my wife. Because she's obediently just said, I'll walk in the way of Jesus at WestJet. And as she walks life with people, like, you want to have some fun, go walk through the Vancouver airport with Jana right now. You make sure you got some time, because it takes a while. You stop constantly. She knows everybody. And she's not allowed to just sort of do this. No, they want to stop and say hi, have a hug, have a little chat. Because something's happening there of a deeper nature. I think Jana's really walking this out in a beautiful way and can speak to it, I would honestly say, in a way that I can't. And so I just want her to be able to come and to share a little bit about what God's been doing, and then I'll come and lead us to the table.
So this is always a bit of a tough one for me, because I don't see myself this way. It's good for me. It's a good challenge. It's good for me to be like, hey, this is who you are. And I'm like, ooh, do I have to start to see myself that way? Okay, perfect, I do. If somebody were to say, oh, are you salt and light? I probably wouldn't be like, yeah, that's totally me. But when someone says, talk to me about how you are salt and light, I look at my life, I evaluate who it is I am and what I do on a daily basis. And that is the reality of who I am. I don't remember a time when that wasn't the reality of who I was. It doesn't have anything to do with the fact that I am trying to be salt and I am trying to be light. It has everything to do with the fact that my life is devoted to those first things. So the Beatitudes, the hungry and the merciful and the pure in heart and the peacemaker and the poor in spirit, that is where these things begin, that as you live into that, into Jesus, into who he has called us to be, that this just is who we are. And so I'm going to speak from my perspective, not because I'm an expert or because I do this perfectly all the time, but because Chad asked me to, so I just will. So basically, we can't try to be this. It won't work. I am salt, so I flavor my atmosphere. I am who I am without hesitation. And that changes things. And so that has very little to do with me. It has everything to do with Jesus. Because I choose to be who he's created me to be in the middle of every situation that I am in. When I was in Comox, I was there for about 4.5 years, and then we left to go to Lethbridge for 1.5 years, and so I had to leave my job, which is a very difficult thing to do because I absolutely loved it and enjoyed it, and everyone was so like, I'm going to miss you, and it's so sad that you're going, you know, all of those things, which is really great. Isn't that nice to know that you're loved and you're going to be missed, and that's all so good. But none of that meant the same to me as when I came back to that job after we were gone. And consistently what I heard from people, whether it was good or bad, because not everyone loved me there. That's not the reality. Salt and light doesn't always bring out the goodness. It brings out the realness, okay? So there were people who didn't necessarily love the changes I was making in that atmosphere. But consistently, when I got back, I heard from people how different it was when I was not there. They felt the lack of my presence in that place. And again, that's not me, that's Jesus. Mm. I was Jesus there, and they felt it when he was gone. That's an important thing. That's the only reason why I am where I am and do what I do, is because those are the kinds of things that happen. I can speak to deep places of heart and longing and healing without fear, because the world longs for that. So the reality is, we can say this about ourselves, and we talk a lot about healing and identity and all of those kinds of things within this community. But the truth is, everybody actually wants that. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter if you know Jesus or not. People want to be known, and people want to be seen for who they are. That is the longing and the desire in humans' hearts. It does not matter where you come from or if you go to church on Sunday. And so I feel as though salt for me is not just a flavor. I'm not just changing the atmosphere, but salt also draws flavor out of whatever it is that it touches. It brings out, eggs aren't just good because they taste like salt if you put salt on them. They're good because it actually helps to draw out the flavor of the egg. Who doesn't want to have their true flavor shown? Who doesn't want to have people actually see who they are inside, right? That's what salt does. Light, the Cambridge Dictionary definition of light, talks about it as being brightness from a source. So it talks about all the different sources of light. But brightness from a source that allows things to be seen. That is the definition of light. So we're not just going into the middle of somewhere and shining a light on something. We're actually bringing an allowance for people to be seen. It's bigger than just showing what's there. It's actually allowing them to be truly seen and allowing them to be truly understood and felt. The other piece about that is, though, it talks about putting, I can't remember what the term is it uses, but putting a basket over the light. Also, I would say salt is no good in a shaker, right? So to just be salt in a shaker, or to just be a light with a basket over top of you, doesn't actually do anything. You have to be able to have that light showing, and you have to be able to sprinkle that salt out. So I have real life conversations with people. I talk about stuff. They are clear on who it is that I am and what I do. And it helps when your husband's a priest, I have to admit, because then when they say, "What's your husband do?" You can't really hide that, right? Like, there's no way around that. It is just in the fabric of who we are. And so I know that that's very helpful in my situation, but even just the fact that, you know, people can just easily assume I moved here because there's so much more opportunity at the airport, and isn't that great that I came so I can work my way up and in this job, and that's great. I could easily let them believe that, right? I'm quick to point out that we came here to plant a church, but that is actually why we're here, that this is a bonus, and that I love being there, and that's so great. But the reality is, we are here for the church, and that blows people's minds. They don't even understand really what that means, or what that, okay, well, that's so great, and isn't that good? I live in a world where everyone can sort of be who they are without question. And so I just go, well, then I'm going to be who I am without question. Because the same has to be true for me, right? And so then I found myself in situations where I am having healing prayer conversations with people in the middle of the office in the day. I have found myself in situations where people who, without knowing their life story, I can tell that maybe everything hasn't been easy, are thanking me for just loving them for who they are, for encouraging them to be better and to do good things, and encouraging their knowledge where they might be someone who actually, that's probably places of hurt in their life from before. These are things I only know and see because of Jesus. These are things I only know and see because I'm sprinkling that salt. It's not just in the shaker. It's just coming out. So, and I mean, reality is, please don't ever apologize for that, because the truth is, it's going to make you enemies. it's going to make you friends. Both are going to be true, because some people don't want that. As much as the longing of their heart is to be seen and known, if you start seeing and knowing things that aren't really very pretty in people, they don't like that. They don't want it. They don't want those things spread out and broadcast, and they've done a very good job to tuck that all down inside, right? But that's the reality of who we are. It's not something we can be or should be doing or striving towards. There is nothing we can do to make these things happen. This is who we are as the people of God.
Melinda, would you come? And those who have Christ-like character, and I love how Jana captured that for me, because I find for me I want to focus constantly on how to be salt and light. So I love that, is so helpful for the way she articulated that this morning and again this afternoon. Like, that our focus is to be Christ-like. And that we'll find that then as we go, we are salt and light. Right? So certainly we're going to need to pray for boldness. We're going to grow in our ability to show the God. I mean, absolutely. But that the lion's share of our energy just be to fix our eyes on Jesus. Because those who have Christ-like character will have kingdom influence. That's just the promise of Jesus. Like salt and light, the world will be made different because they have the followers of Jesus in it. So what is Jesus, where has Jesus called me? Where has he called you to be salt and light? Take a minute and think about it. Jana shared a little bit of her own story, a little bit of her own journey. But you are the salt of the world. You are the light of the world. Where has Jesus called you to be salt? Where has he put you? Where do you find yourself on a consistent basis? I go to the same Starbucks all the time. It's right by my house. When I walk in, it's like a scene out of Cheers. They all know my name. Yay! They do it partly because it sells coffee. And certainly at first that's why they did it. But more and more it feels like they do it because I'm salt and light. But hey, it gets less and less phony and more genuine. Where do you have fun? Where do you hang out? Where do you work? Where do you buy your coffee? Where has God put you? Where do you live? Who lives by you? Who's around? Where has he called you to be salt and light? Because it's going to be incredible to watch what happens in a season where God's calling us to invitation, to being people who invite the people around us to come with us. We're going to see incredible things if we can catch this, that we are not salt and light when it gets programmed, when the opportunity for it gets programmed. We'll be salt and light then too. We'll do those kinds of things together. But you are salt and light everywhere you go. And I think Jesus wants us to catch that first. I think he wants us to learn the fruitfulness he talks about right here in the passage that we read in our everyday life, in deeper ways and quicker and more than he wants us to catch it even in kind of programmatic ways. I think there's something he wants us to learn right now in this season about that, in this season of invitation and activation, where we step into just being who God's called us to be and watching what he would do. And so I expect that the empty chairs around you would begin to fill up quicker with your baristas and your co-workers and your neighbors than with those who see an advertisement for something we're doing programmatically. That's the nature of this season. And it's because we're salt and light. And as we're salt and light, as we sprinkle and as we take the basket off, we're going to see this kind of, I just have faith for it. So where has Jesus called you to be salt and light? Where has he called you to love and serve people well? To just be a man or a woman of God. And by your very presence to, like salt, preserve life. Call it out in people. Where has he called you to share the gospel? With words, yes, but this passage points even more to our actions. With your deeds, with your life. Where has he called you to share the gospel? to introduce Jesus into the mix.